Park Place Meeting, Sunday morning, 20th June 1976. I think you all know the conventional presentation of the various chakras or centers of psychical energy, as they are called, throughout the body in the system known as the Kundalini Yoga. These centers are associated with, I use the term associated with rather than identified with, various plexuses in the body. At the base of the spine, there is what is called the Mooladhara Chakra. This contains in sum total, all the psychical energy of the body, especially in its potential and reserve condition. The next chakra, Svadhisthana, is associated with the genitals. The third, Manipura, which could be translated as jeweled fortress, is associated with the navel. Now these three chakras deal with our ordinary, everyday, organic life, our psychophysical life in the conditioned world of affairs. In the individual person, they deal mainly with food, sex, commerce. Commerce meaning one's daily activities, whatever they are, through which one earns one's livelihood and has one's constant social contact with other human beings, whether it be in terms of business or pleasure or whatever it may be. Food, sex, and commerce. They are called the lower three chakras. I think we must be quite clear that the word lower is not used in any derogatory sense. And we mustn't think of them as inferior to the so-called higher chakras. It's only a convenient phrase. And in the body which stands upright in space, they are a little bit nearer the earth than the other chakras. The fourth one is Anahata, called the heart chakra. Then you have the fifth, Visuddhi. The term Visuddhi literally means pure, associated with the throat chakra and concerned with speech. The heart chakra is the level at which our humane qualities, our humanness finds expression. When any individual has the truly developed social sense, he is quite awake to the fact that he is a member of the human society in which he lives. When at this chakra he has his first touch with universality, because a true social sense implies that an exclusively self-concerned awareness of his own being is not the truth of his being. He's a member, he's part and parcel of a much larger whole. And the first experience of that wholeness is in terms of family, society, nation, mankind. It is here that he is awake to it. Remember, these chakras and so on are all symbolical associations with these concepts. Mainly symbolical. At Vishuddhi, which is concerned with speech, it is not ordinary everyday speech that is represented here. Ordinary everyday speech, 99% of which at least, as you know, is just idle talk and senseless chatter, is more associated with Manipura, the center at the navel, the world of daily affairs, the world of commerce, needs constant communication between man and man, and that communication takes place in terms of speech. And whether it be speech in the form of business, or of politics, or of learning technical know-hows, or whether it be just the friendly interchange of social meeting and gathering and so forth. So speech in that sense is more associated with Manipura. Speech associated with the throat chakra is concerned more with what I call prophetic speech. We'll go into that a little bit in a few moments. Then comes a very, very important chakra, the Ajna chakra, center between the eyebrows, which is associated with also the pituitary gland. This, as I said the other day, is the chakra where one hears the command of the master. And lastly, the seventh chakra, there is the Sahasrara, the thousand-petaled lotus, as it is called, the top of the head. In Buddhist yoga, Sahasrara and Ajna are generally treated as one, the crown chakra, and at the base of the spine, Muladhara and Svadhisthana are treated as one. When a person begins to awake to that which is larger than himself, which comprises a greater whole in which he, the individual, is integrated, then he begins to free himself gradually from the domination of food and sex and commerce. There is something more than all that. That deals with us insofar as the organism is derived from a primordial ancestor, which was an animal. And it is from here that what we call his upward journey begins to be aware not only of the larger whole, but a larger whole for which there is no limit, until he wakes up to transcendence itself. Note the position, the cross-legged position, which the yogi adopts in meditation. Here, the base of the spine touches earth. The Muladhara chakra is associated with earth, Svadhisthana with water, Manipura with fire, Anahata with air, Vishuddhi with Akasha, which used to be translated as ether. So Muladhara, which represents earth, meaning the most concrete expression of the one total reality. At the other end, the pole, the other pole, so to say, Sahasrara, that represents the subtlest expression of the one total reality, transcendence itself. It is said that they put it in these terms: Shiva resides here. Muladhara represents power, psycho-mental power, which is going to be psycho-physical power, which is going to undergo transformation into psycho-spiritual power as the unfolding of the yogi takes place, step by step. Now, in this posture, Muladhara, earth as represented, symbolized in the living organism, is in touch with Mother Earth, the whole planet. And the Sahasrara chakra points upwards. The spine, in its erect position, the brain, spine, nerves, and so on, is the tree of life, the Ashwatha tree. This is the tree to which specific reference is made in the Gita when Sri Krishna talks of the Ashwatha tree with roots above and branches below. And the trunk, of course, pointing downwards and upwards. Now notice that the source of power, when we start, is the earth. Mooladhara touches Mother Earth. And Sahasrara points to the zenith. This is the upside down tree of life in man. Trees, as we ordinarily know them, are the other way around. There the root of the tree is geotropic, points towards the center of the earth. But with a tree whose root points to the center of the earth, there is a limit. Just the earth itself and the center, which is a limited point in space. With man it's the other way around. It's his root, his brain, which points towards the zenith. And the zenith, where is it? The zenith represents infinity. You can't pinpoint it. It is nowhere, it is everywhere. Whosoever realizes that state where all his power, Shakti as it is called, can travel upwards and be united with Shiva who resides there. Whosoever can realize that, realizes infinity. Realizes the full state of perfect manhood, which is identical with Godhood, with Brahmanhood, with the realization of the Atma, with the Unio Mystica. And so, what is attributed to God in the conventional manner, attributed to the unborn, unbecome, unmade, its omnipotence, its omniscience, and its omnipresence is realized. And symbolically, it's quite marvelous that our senses convey to us, sense of sight, of course, the infinitude which is around us and above us. So earth to earth, Mooladhara touching earth. And this is the throne of the Lord, the throne of Shiva, and represents heaven. Now I said that Shakti climbs upwards. Now do not imagine that Shakti always is located down at Mooladhara. The living organism functions as a whole. So to some degree or other, all the different chakras are active. Especially when any person whatsoever is in that state of inner quietness and feels becomes intensely aware consciously of that touch of transcendence, of the marvelous, of that which is utterly beyond and paradoxically, mysteriously, is also completely here, if only for a fraction of a second. When he is aware in that sense, Sahasrara is in touch with all the different chakras as such. And he doesn't remain completely tied down to what we may call the lower levels, using the word lower in the Kamana Garden sense of less beautiful, less wonderful, less perfect, and so on. Now, Anahata is the sort of key point, the central point. It is at this point we are in touch with all humanity. Human beings as they are. And it is from the state of realized humanness and what it signifies, it is from that point that one may establish perfect relationship with what are called the three lower chakras and the three chakras above Anahata. In establishing this perfect relationship with the three lower chakras, the lower chakras have ceased to dominate one's conscious life. One is not at the mercy of gluttony, of the craving for food, sex, or acquiring great wealth or possessions or anything like that, or achieving wonderful things in the world of affairs, all of which achievements are always, after all, to some degree or other, at the expense of others. He is free from all those self-enclosing drives which involve harm and hurt to others, as well as in the relative sphere some good to others also. As one opens up towards the higher chakras, as we say, through the intensifying of the purity of one's life, and above all, through the greater degree of quietness within oneself, and above all, freedom from self-obtrusiveness upon the world. This is an extremely important point. Our self-assertiveness, aggressiveness, egoism, vanity, personal display, shining in the world, and so forth, is all associated with the animal in us. Whether it be the good animal, which is rather rare with human beings, or what is more common, the beast in us, which deliberately wants to dominate and achieve and so forth, instead of living simply in harmony with the laws of nature. As we go upwards to Vishuddhi, that which took place in Manipura reaches its apotheosis, its transformation, complete transformation at Vishuddhi. Manipura deals with commerce. Commerce not the word must not be restricted to mere business, earning one's living, doing one's particular job, and so on and so on. It also refers to all that comes under our cultural life too. Our life of thought and study and art and so on and so on. And Manipura, situated at the navel, is associated with the digestive processes where the body is concerned. It is also associated with the digestive processes where thought and study and knowledge and so on is concerned. You see? Now, this aspect of thought, study, the mental life and so on finds its fruition and its perfection at Visuddhi. When the quietness is realized, when the freedom from all self-obtrusiveness is realized, then thought can become almost exclusively inspired thought. And speech becomes prophetic speech. Now, there is a specific meaning to this term, prophetic speech. It is the speech which, when uttered by the Pure One, exercises an inspiring power over the listener who cares to listen and truly listens. That is the meaning of prophetic speech. We have unfortunately come to associate the word prophecy with telling us something about the future to be. There's nothing to do with the future to be. Look through all the scriptures of the world. They were called the prophets. They prophesied. When they spoke the word of God, the Brahmavada, a term which the Buddha himself uses. I specifically say the Buddha himself because the entity God idea is completely thrown out in Buddhist teaching. They speak the Brahma word, the word which is concerned with inspiring people to wake up to their inner potential. That inner potential is embodied, as I said the other day, in the God conceptions of the world, or the conceptions of the perfected Holy One, or in conceptions of the Buddha, or the Arahant, or the saint, or whoever he may be. So, speech as associated with Visuddhi is that kind of inspired speech. Now, this kind of inspired speech is way and above ordinary preaching of sermons or giving theological disquisitions and so forth. It is the word of power, and a word of power through which the beneficence of transcendence, the invitation by transcendence to us to wake up to the transcendent within us is conveyed. This is what must be realized. You will see at once the extraordinary importance of silence, of maintaining silence, where constant talk is concerned. Because all other talk, except of course where it is necessitated for the carrying on of our daily circumstantial life, all other talk is talk which just binds us to the undeveloped state, the unfruitive condition. Again and again the great teachers have emphasized the importance of silence, excepting where the talk is about that towards which man is developing. So speech at Vishuddhi is that kind of prophetic speech. Ajna, where the command of the teacher is heard. This is the realm of Indra. Indra is Lord here. Now, I use the word Indra. You will find in the Buddhist texts too Indra mentioned, Prajapati mentioned, and Brahma mentioned in the Pali Canon. In the Rig Veda, the lordship of the world, and the world means not just the world as we conceive of it, as the cosmos and so forth, but the world first and foremost represents the living organism itself. In the Rig Veda, Varuna, the Lord of the moral order, he's the moral governor of the world. His lordship is paramount. As man grows and becomes aware of the significance of individuality and realizes individuality, then from within himself he controls his world. It's no longer the external order, the external law, the Ritta, which permeates the entire universe in actual fact, which helps him onwards. Now his withinness is active and in line with this moral order. So you find various hymns in the Rig Veda which are addressed to Varuna Indra combined. Indra represents realized individuality at its peak point in terms of selflessness. It's very important to understand this, because the hymns of the Rig Veda as they stand give the impression that Indra is an extraordinary egoist. In addition to being someone who is constantly quaffing draughts of Soma, you see, that he is a mighty boaster of all the wonderful feats he performed, and so forth and so forth. It's written in that language partly purposely in order that fools may not touch things sacred. But for the one who is percipient, who has realized humility within himself, who has understanding, he will see the true significance of Indra. It's fully realized individuality in terms of selflessness. And Indra remains Lord of Heaven thereafter. Lord of Heaven. He is the correspondent of Zeus. Indra is the wielder of the thunderbolt. Now, all of you have seen that diagram on the book. May I just... this one, which is also in the body of the book towards the end, in the last chapter, with Anahata at the base, and the other three chakras, the so-called lower, facing the so-called upper. So Manipura will face Vishuddhi. I've already explained the transformation of Manipura to Vishuddhi. Now, Indra facing Swadhisthana. Swadhisthana, which controls the genitals. And the supreme expression, the supreme self-assertion of man's separateness and his dominance is expressed through sex, of course. There is no expression of man or woman which is so intensely self-assertive as the self-expression in the sexual act. Now, in the Rig Veda, we have this remarkable presentation that Indra is the one who slays the demon of drought. In the hymns of the Veda, they say Indra slays the demon. I say actually he doesn't slay the demon. The Veda says that he slays the demon of drought and thereby loosens the waters which bring about fertility. Now Ahi Vritra, as he is called, Ahi is the serpent. Vritra means obstructor. There is also Ahi Budhnya. You know how the serpent also represents wisdom. Now the serpent represents, in actuality, the whole of the life force, the whole of one's life energy. On every plane, right from the physical, biological, to the transcendental, Ahi, the serpent, represents that. When one is unawakened, not in command of oneself, the sexual drive is the most obstructive element. This is Ahi Vritra. But when one has realized full command over oneself, then this serpent, Ahi Vritra, becomes Ahi Budhnya, and he is represented as the serpent holding his tail in his own mouth. Now note carefully, the serpent doesn't destroy that tail of his. This is the important point. That is why I do not accept the translation and the original statement of Indra slaying the demon. The demon is not slain. The demon is transformed. The serpent is the serpent of wisdom now, and he holds Svadhisthana, the source of this tremendous drive and power and so on. He holds it not in check, but in right expression. Holding it in his mouth, from the mouth cometh forth speech. Isn't that so? Holding it in his mouth, it means that all this power is utilized and can be utilized for the dissemination of pure wisdom. So you find that Ajna faces Svadhisthana. When that state is realized, all the tyranny of sexual desire and drives and so forth is completely over. Absolutely over. One can easily live naturally the celibate life. There is no need to exercise any control or anything. You are just naturally celibate then. But all that power, it doesn't need any sort of sublimation, any sort of substitution by expending all your energy in good works and serving mankind and torturing yourself with the sufferings and horrors of what happens all over the world and so on. Utterly free of all that. You are Lord of Heaven. And in that lordship you hold all power in your hands. All power in heaven and earth is now given unto me, said Jesus. See its significance? One of its significances, I mean. Now, in finality, Shakti becomes at one with Shiva at Sahasrara in deep meditation. The whole being is the living embodiment of transcendence. The infinity of the boundless and the infinity of the small, the infinity of the large and the infinity of the small, the point, is in complete union. And that is why the yogi in supreme meditation is said to represent everything. And he says, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. This is the reason. The separate selfness is completely gone. And the totality is embodied and manifest through the obvious, visible, separate self. These are some of the meanings of these things. Now it is said that this is the state of supreme bliss. Shakti is represented as a goddess. Kundalini, and the accent is on the last syllable, Kundalini is the goddess. This power is symbolized as a goddess. And she is in union, in blissful union with her Lord Shiva. This sort of thing takes place in flashes when the great creative geniuses of the world get their supreme flashes of inspiration. Momentarily this happens. Now, the yogi who has sort of gone all the way, the religious who has realized the supreme truth, can maintain Shiva and Shakti in permanent union through all his daily life, not merely in the supreme states of communion in specific meditation. It is said that the united Shiva Shakti then come down, right down to Mooladhara. I have added something on my own responsibility over this for various reasons. And if you have any real interest along these lines and can practice and realize these things, you will see why I have put it like that. The books, as far as I know, stop at the coming down to Mooladhara. What happens when the united Shiva Shakti come down to Mooladhara? Remember that the upper three, Vishuddhi, Ajna, Sahasrara, are a transcendent trinity. Passing through the level of Anahata, which is accepting humanity universally, and then coming down into the lower chakras, as we call them, which deal with food and sex and commerce. What happens to these three when this energy transcendentally in union with the ultimate consciousness, the ultimate reality, come down through them? They transcendentalize food, sex, commerce. One could write a small book about just that element, that aspect alone. You must use your own insights and feel it out. Food, sex and commerce, I'll say only this here, food, sex and commerce are associated with man's struggles, difficulties. You know how it is put in Genesis, when the fruit from the tree of life was plucked and afterwards the sentence pronounced, thorns and thistles, by the sweat of your brow, in pain shall you bring forth, etc., etc. All those are symbolical statements. All that conflict is completely out. And all the discord and horror of spoilt human relationships which are associated with Manipura is absolutely out. There is indeed the perfect harmony. In the presence of the Holy One, there is only the heavenly state, state of peace and happiness, state of utter contentment, with no intrusion of selfness upon it to mar it. So this coming down is a transcendentalizing. But Shiva cannot live at Mooladhara. Man, you and I were made in the image of Shiva, in the image of God. And the image of God can live at the human center, because you and I are human by nature. So they move upwards together again and reside at Anahata. You will find this explained in the book. And the diagram with this sort of diagram gives you, I think, a more adequate representation. At anahata, so now, instead of muladhara being the base for your life as the pure, realized human being, anahata is the base. Muladhara and sahasrara, power, pure power, and transcendent love, wisdom, etc., are in complete harmony. This power is transcendentalized altogether. There is no possibility of its misuse, because love and wisdom now exist in perfect harmony together. And you are based at anahata. And being based at anahata, whilst in physical fact your feet touch the earth, in human fact, purified, realized human fact, you float in space at anahata. You are unfettered by the earth. You don't feel compelled by the zenith. You are not afraid of it. It is not far away. The zenith is here. The earth is here. You know how Sri Krishna said to Arjuna, "Behold in my single body the entire universe." It's a marvelous symbolism and a marvelous way of understanding the development, the progressing, and the fruition of man by rightly treading the way of power, which is this Kundalini Yoga.